Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio here on the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges, host of Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. Well, as always on Friday, we've got two great guests. It's a double-hour show. Coming up the first hour, we'll have Classical Blast joining us. We've got Bill Sinar, and also Sophie Monroy. They'll be joining us to talk about their big show coming up at the Acorn Theater on the 21st, Sophie's free concert in Hobart this Sunday. And then on the second half, we'll have Dennis Llewellyn Day. He does blues, bossa nova, and ballads, and you'll hear a little of all of that. It's all coming up after your headlines. Welcome to Midwest Beats here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and streaming at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges, and coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Sophia Monroy and Bill Sinar. They are members of Classical Blast. They've got a big show coming up Friday, December 21st at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, and that'll be the entire group with some special guests. We'll find out who's going to be there and what that's about. And we're also going to talk to Sophia about her free concert that she's doing at the Record Bin in downtown Hobart this Sunday between 4 and 6 p.m. She'll be doing a solo acoustic show. So all of that is coming up. But right now, we're going to play a little something off their latest album, which is what they're touring behind. It's called Dark Side of the Yule. It's a holiday classic. And we'll have both of them joining us after this. Carol of the Bells starts us off.
Thank you.
Game of Thrones, a little mashup there. That is off the Dark Side of the Yule CD, which has been available since last holiday season. It's Classical Blasts and Friends. You've got to make sure you include the Friends because they've got a lot of them on there. They're going to be coming to town. In fact, they just sold out the Chicago Street Theater in downtown Valparaiso. My good friend and former radio cohort Paul Brown presented them. In fact, I got turned on to this group through Paul a couple of years ago. And they do mashups of classical music with classic rock. And for the holidays, they take some carols and they mash it up with classic rock. And they also have some original stuff as well. But they sold out the Chicago Street Theater last weekend. And if you missed it and you didn't get a chance to get tickets to that, well, you're redeemed because on Friday, December 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern time, they're going to be just across the state line at the Acorn Theater. And again, that'll be the entire lineup of Classical Blast. And we may be seeing some Friends pop up there, too. We'll find out in just a minute, as we are joined now by Bill Sinar and Sophia Monroy. Are you both with us?
We are.
Yes, we are here, Tom.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, we're doing great. How are you?
I'm looking forward to the shows coming up. Of course, Sophia, we've got you at the Record Bin this Sunday. We'll talk about that in a bit. But we also have you on December 21st at the Acorn Theater. So these are some big shows coming up.
We heard that song that you played right before you we started talking, the Carol of the Ballast and Game of Thrones, and man, is that big. I forgot how good that sounds.
The thing is with a holiday album, you play it around the holidays, and then you put it away. And I feel the same. I was playing it in the store over at the Record Bin, and I've had some people come up and say, what is this? This is great. And I forgot how good it is. It's just kind of crazy.
It's our first two songs that we do, and we put so much into it that we feel drained after the first song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the first song of the show, and it's so great.
You guys have two albums out. You've got Metamorphosis, which is your, I guess, your non-holiday album. And then you also have The Dark Side of the Yule.
We also have Classified, too, which is our first
one. Oh, that's true. And I happen to have a copy of that here. What am I thinking?
We'll try to
get something. You don't have
to burn me a copy, bud?
Maybe I will. And it was funny because as I'm opening up the records to play them, I'm like, oh my gosh, Metamorphosis is still in the CD player at the record store. So I don't have that album. I have the cover, don't have the album, but I do have Classified. We've got a song that Barbara, your manager, and your wife has sent.
Same thing, manager,
yeah. We also have a song that she sent that Sophia is singing on. We're going to try to feature that. I do want to let listeners know that it was recorded at a live show. It's not a studio quality recording. But I do want to let folks get a chance to hear her voice, which brings me to my next topic. Sophia, you've been in the band now for a year as the primary lead singer, the female singer. When are we going to get some recordings? When's the new stuff coming out from you guys? And Bill, you're the man behind the songs.
Yeah, we've been waiting to do originals.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We were going to do originals last January. That was the plan. And then Javi, our last singer, had to move back to Spain right then. So instead of us starting to work on originals, we ended up looking for a new singer. And obviously, to our pleasure, couldn't think of the right word, you know, by finding Sophie. So that really helped us out a lot. But, and then we've been so busy working up the Bach to Rock tunes and then the Christmas show, and I think we even did an Irish show. But so hopefully January again.
Okay, that's the target date?
Yeah, we started, I've been with the band for a very little time, and we've been working on already for the shows that they had already set up, like the Bach to Rock shows, and we started off with the St. Patrick's shows. And then we had to go over the Christmas shows, and we really didn't have any enough time to actually do any original music. But that's definitely on the plans for things to do at the very beginning of next year.
So, mm-hmm.
And not only original, but we'll put some new mashes together that might be even more perfect for Sophie.
Exactly.
She's kind of, you know, we got some new ones already, but she's kind of fitting into all the other ones that we've done before.
Right. Well, I've got to say,
once you start to fine tune.
The last time I heard you perform, Sophie, when you guys were in the record store and you did the stripped down version, when you did the Cranberries, it made the hairs on my arm raise. I mean, you do that so well. You channel her so well.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite ones. We have been trying to, like Bill said, we have been trying to put up some new songs according to my voice, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys in the band were so used to having a male singer that when I started playing with them, we had to learn and we had to add some more, a few songs to so that they could fit with my voice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And changing some keys for some songs and trying to get some more songs that could fit my voice properly so we could actually deliver the right message to the audience.
Now, are you going to be...
The instruments are hard enough the way they are. Now we're changing keys on top of it.
Right.
Well, that said, are you involved in picking some of these songs then, Sophia? I mean, like I said, Dolores O'Riordan, one of my favorite female singers of all time, who we just recently lost, and when I heard you sing her in her voice, so to speak, with your own fingerprints on it, it was beautiful. And I'm hoping that you'll do that song at the show that we're going to do, either this Sunday at the Record Bin or at the Acorn Theater, because I love the way you do that. And are you going to be doing more Cranberries, or what kind of female artists are you looking to mash on some of the future stuff?
Well, you know, for the Christmas show, we actually have a mashup between Amy Grant and Amy Lee from Evanescence.
Wow.
I think, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Evanescence. I even saw them live a few months ago at the Ravinia Festival. So it was so awesome. And, yeah, I'm trying to get some more ideas of female singers. But, you know, even with bands, with male singers, there are some songs that fit very well with my voice. So we try to mix up everything, you know, male and female singers, that we can get some more ideas, more songs that we could add to our repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guarantee you the Breath of Heaven, Bring Me to Life mashup
right.
will make the hairs on your arms pop up again on that one. Guaranteed.
It is pretty good, yeah. It's, yeah.
Wow. Now,
then Mary, Did You Know right after that, another huge mm-hmm. dramatic piece.
And that's actually the one that we have here that is coming at us off of a video stream. So, again, for listeners that are tuned in, this is a very rough recording. It sounds okay in the studio. I don't know how it'll transpose over the air, but we're going to play a little bit of this. And just give me an idea. Where was this recorded? I understand it was from this past weekend. Is this from Chicago Street?
Well, we've had a few performances already in Wisconsin, Galena, and Valparaiso, so I'm not really sure which show the recording is from, but we have played this song on every Christmas show.
Okay.
But it's a pretty good one. It's one of my actual personal favorite ones.
But I've never heard this recording. Have you, Sophie?
No, I haven't, actually.
So.
All right. Well, we're going to hear it now collectively worldwide here on the stream and at 89.1 FM. This is Sophie Monroy singing lead with Classical Blast live somewhere last weekend. Here's the song.
Oh, baby boy, when one day one
Did You Know? We're going to give you a little taste of that. That is Sophie Monroy. She is singing live there on stage with Classical Blast last weekend. And again, that is not a studio recording. That is something that someone had taped and posted. But it gives you an idea of how well you fit in with these guys. And I got to say, I'm excited for the new album. I've been living with these albums for a while, and I'm still not tired of them. And that seems to be the opinion of so many people. Were you surprised that last weekend's show at Chicago Street Theater sold out, not just sold out, but sold out well in advance? And has that been the norm this season?
No, not at all. I mean, we were happy. But, you know, I think this was our, like, was it our fourth time there?
Yeah, the fourth time from the band playing there, yeah.
And we know that Paul is so together. We knew that between us being there a number of times and Paul doing his thing, we kind of assumed it would be, and we were very happy for us and for them also.
Mm-hmm.
It was very exciting for me, too, you know, being the first time playing there and singing with the band and having a sold-out show. That was really great.
Now, you've got, are you doing the same set for the holiday shows? Obviously, the holiday season's very short. So are the shows, if they saw you at Chicago, Michigan, just about 45 minutes from Northwest Indiana, on December 21st, it's a Friday show. It's at 8 p.m., but it's 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Because don't forget, as soon as you hit the state line there, we lose an hour going up, but you gain it coming back. So you can stay out and party a little bit longer, I guess. That's the upside of going to Michigan. All right. Also want to remind you that Sophia, or Sophie, as she likes to be called, Monroy, will be performing with Bill just at the end there when we were playing that song. He was telling me that, yeah, he is going to make it. So Bill and Sophia will be at the Record Bin at 218 Main Street in downtown Hobart this Sunday between 4 and 6, and they will be playing a hodgepodge of different things. Maybe she'll do some Spanish language stuff. Maybe she'll do the Cranberries like I hope she will. But I'm not sure what they'll play, but they will be playing at least an hour. We'll do a little interview, intimate interview in the back room. And again, it only holds 20, 25 people. So get out there early. Get there about 3, 3:30, and make sure you got a seat for this 4 p.m. concert. We may even have a special guest joining us. You never can tell. All right. Without any further ado, we are going to get into our second half of the show. And this is a gentleman who has made quite a career for himself. He is currently in New York and has been there for quite a while. But his roots are right here in the region, as we like to say. He grew up here in East Chicago, Indiana. He's a graduate of Gary Roosevelt High School. And, well, we're going to get to know him. We're going to find out what his story is, how he got from East Chicago to Manhattan and New York and all the different things he's done along the way. He's got a new album out, Dennis Llewellyn Day, Bossa Nova, or Bossa Blues and Ballads. Bossa Blues and Ballads is the title. And this came out this year, I believe, 2018. And we're going to play some songs from it. We're going to talk to Dennis and find out how his journey has gone and where it is taking him next. So let's let the music do the talking before we meet the man. And this song is aptly titled because you need to listen here. Listen here. It's Dennis Day.
Sailed the listen to your body, let the rhythm take you home. Listen here, we'll play this groove till rivers run clear. So clap your hands and tap your feet. When you're grooving, there's no rhythm retreat. If you feel like it, just get on your feet. Jazz is sassy, some say classy. So whatever your perspective, don't doubt, be too protective. Let your body take control. When Eddie Harris plays, he's bound to make it day.
The swinging band with Les McCann, harder than one soul could stand.
Gotta love it. Listen here. That is a song that I remember from Chicago's own Eddie Harris, tenor sax man. I did a little electric piano, as I recall. And paying homage there is a guy from Northwest Indiana. Dennis Llewellyn Day has made that song his own. It's on his latest album, Bossa Blues and Ballads. And Dennis, are you with us?
I am with you, Tom. How are you today?
I am fine, and I do appreciate you sending me this album. I've been enjoying it quite a bit, and I got to say, I'm an old Eddie Harris fan myself. I love jazz. I love Miles. I love horns, and hearing that, and a little shout-out there to Eddie, and it was just wonderful.
Well, I feel the same way, and I'm sure his widow, Sarah, will feel the same way as well. She's still promoting his music, and she's really happy about this piece, and I'm happy about that.
Excellent. Now let's talk a little bit. I was kind of teasing the listening audience before we played the song that you're from here, but you've been in New York for quite a while. You've got a lot of accomplishments. You've played with some amazing people. You have your own record label. I mean, you're a self-made renaissance man, I guess you'd say, because you have your hand in everything, it seems, if I'm looking at your website correct. Film, videos, management, I mean, all these different things that you're doing. How did a kid from East Chicago, Indiana, get to where you are? Let's give them a Reader's Digest version, first of all, of how you got into music. You're from a musical family, correct?
That's correct. I'm all from right. a musical family. My mom, late mother Irene Day Comer, she was a fairly well-known singer regionally there in Chicagoland, out of the Antioch Baptist Church and all of those local churches there that make up such a wonderful network of sacred music and worship there in the Northwest Indiana quadrant. But she sang there for over 70 years. And she, in fact, she had an album, has an album that I actually produced and really digitized it. It was originally in vinyl back in 1981. That's still being heard and still much beloved by many fans. So, yes, I have that legacy of music, and Congressman Belosky was kind enough to enter her a tribute for her in the Congressional Record that still stands. You can Google it even today. Her accomplishments. She didn't ask for money. She didn't really seek fame. She was just out there to sing and in her own mind and own way to serve her community and serve her religion.
How long ago did she pass?
2009 of February.
Okay. Well, she sounds like she had a very wonderful and long life.
Yeah, she lived to be in her 80s, so yeah, she was happy with her life, and particularly the last quarter of her life was really pretty amazing. She did some amazing things in terms of being able to reach people with her music.
Now, I've got to ask you, being a mother, did she try to steer you away from being a professional musician and say, Dennis, get a real job, get something you can bank on and support yourself on because music is such a transitional kind of thing? Or did she really support you as an artist, professionally, I should say, as an artist?
Boy, Tom, you're a real pro. You really know the right question to ask. I tell you. Well, you know, actually it was my dad who had this mantra like, son, you better have something to fall back on if that's the route you're going to go. Very mm-hmm. practical guy, you know. So not particularly. I mean, she knew that we loved to sing. Singing was a part of our household. We had a piano in the house, and I had taken lessons for a little while. And so we would have talent shows, and we would encourage one another. And in fact, my sister's quite an accomplished singer herself. She's classically trained. But I was interested in sports. Hey, I'm from the region.
Right.
I was interested in sports. I wanted to be a ball player. And I was never, you know, a tremendous ball player. I never made the Chicago Roosevelt's Rough Riders, but I played intramurals, and I played in the Catherine House Settlement League, Biddy Ball, and the church leagues, and in the streets. And so I still played here in Harlem and in New York in my 30s. So, but basketball fell sway to music. Music was always something in the back of my mind because I wanted to pursue music and sing, but I just wasn't sure quite how to do it. I knew I had to have a career as well. And so, you know, I worked in the steel mills for a while and for a year after high school before I even entertained going into college full time. I was at IU Extension there, Northwest Extension, and I went down to Fisk University.
Okay, so you're talking about IUN in Gary there on Broadway?
Well, no, actually, the extension right there on Indianapolis, going into Chicago, right there across from the old Chicago Roosevelt High School.
Okay, I know where you're talking now.
You know
okay.
what I'm talking
yep,
about?
Yep.
So you know how long ago that's been.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to make a long story short, I kept it in the back of my mind, and I knew that I had to prepare myself academically and in terms of professionally. And so my main goal was to succeed in terms of academics and get into college and finish that and start a career. So I was able to continue to sing off and on with various jobs. And as they say, keep your day job. I kept the day job, and I would sing in clubs and different venues. And I did that for years and years, and sometimes I would only take jobs that would allow me to be able to sing in my spare time. I taught for a while, and that gave me the summers off here in New York where I can spend the summers traveling and performing and and evenings as well. And then later I decided after 9/11 that I would go full-time into music, and that was a real epiphany for me. When you're not doing the things that you really, really want to proceed to do, you need to reevaluate, you know, your tracks and decide if you want to make a detour. And that's what I did. I decided that I would really give my focus more to the music.
Jump into the deep end and go all for it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I felt that it was now or never. Even though I was having successes and I was performing with some of the best artists, it's one of the things about New York. And there's just so much great talent here and so many ways to become exposed to the best.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always someone who's good and someone who's better. And so there's always this goal of trying to improve oneself and to reach to the next level because you're around many of the best in their professions and in their trades and their arts. And so it's always a very stimulating environment. I found it to be. But East Chicago was in the Gary area. That area had such great talents as well. You know, when we look at the talents that come out of there, and when I look back in hindsight after my life, it's pretty much behind me now. I'm still looking forward, but I'm honest about the mortuary tables. I know that I've seen a lot of good days and had a lot of good times, and I'm looking at the great artists that came out of that area that impressed me so. And you know, in fact, I up until I was in kindergarten, I lived next door to Stevie Wonder's grandparents.
Wow!
And then he would come to East Chicago all through his young adulthood until his grandfather passed away. And and only about six blocks from there was Michael Jackson's grandparents. About five blocks from where Stevie's grandparents lived were Michael Jackson's grandparents.
Wow!
But then we had also the you know, people like Maurice Rogers, who's a great blues artist who's doing amazing things, and we're still in touch. And we had great groups. Some of the groups that we had when I was coming up there in the area were integrated groups, and this was in a time where that wasn't real in vogue.
Right.
But we had fellows that, you know, we would rehearse over one another's homes. You know, we'd rehearse over on the East Chicago side, and they would come to my neighborhood, and we would do gigs, and we would do talent shows and sock hops. And in fact, that the show, the movie Four Friends by Steve Tessage, there's a scene. Another hometown guy. He was a couple years ahead of me, and he won the Oscar, of course, for Breaking Away. But he had a great movie called Four Friends, and he has a singing group in that movie that's singing at a sock hop. And that's a takeoff on a group that we had. It was an integrated group, a guy named Dusty Rhodes, who was the principal, retired as principal of one of the Hammond High Schools. And Jim Cogan was a city councilman in East Chicago for years. He was in that group. And myself and Jerry Talbert and Paul King on guitar and Jamie Dawson on guitar. So we had some really great artists in those days, and that's just been a carryover for me to try to retain and sustain that kind of legacy.
Mm-hmm. I have a good friend of mine that sings here often. I'm sure you're familiar with the Spaniels, and Billy Shelton has worked with me on many different shows, and he's also a graduate from there, probably well ahead of you, I'm sure.
Well, you know, you mentioned Gary Roosevelt. Actually, I'm from East Chicago Roosevelt.
Oh.
I grew up in East Chicago Roosevelt.
That's right.
I graduated from there.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Different
but,
Roosevelt.
Yeah, right. The Panthers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So, but I mean, all just great legacies between the two schools. Gary Roosevelt had one of the most fantastic talent shows of any venue anywhere that you can imagine. I mean, that's where the Jackson 5 came out of, the Gary Roosevelt tradition. Avery Brooks, the great actor, he came out of that tradition. Denise Williams, the singer, came out of that tradition. You know, Paul Warfield came out of that tradition. So, I mean, there's just so many. And then out of East Chicago, Washington, my mother and others in her era came out of the Paul Robeson Singers, a glee club that toured all over Northwest Indiana.
She sang with Paul?
She sang with Paul Robeson Singers. The Paul Robeson Singers, they were named after Paul Robeson.
Okay, I was going to say, that is truly an honor. What a man he was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So they were named after Paul Robeson in his honor, and he was still alive at the time. And that group was, you know, they introduced, you know, the Negro spirituals to many people who had not had access to those types of songs, that type of music, the work songs and that sort of thing. And so that's the kind of milieu that existed in Indiana. And the kids had the opportunity, at least in my generation, to grow up learning music and learning. At East Chicago Roosevelt, we knew all of the Broadway tunes from My Fair Lady and from Oklahoma and from all of the various plays and productions that had these tremendous musical scores. You were required to know those even if you were in an orchestra or a band. So you had this great sense of music, and you had the singing Hoosiers in Indiana. And so there was always this idea that music was a possibility, and it was something I enjoyed so much. And we spent a lot of time, like, just singing doo-wop in the street corners. You mentioned Billy Shelton.
But I had
the dubious honor of attending Pookie's funeral in Washington, D.C. back in 2007. In January, his funeral was in Washington. And all of the originals were there, and they sang. And there's a video, or several videos posted of that performance where they sang Peace of Mind at his funeral. Very touching event.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to know Pookie as a teenager. And that was one of the impressionable moments for me as a youngster about the music. So it stayed in the back of my mind. And I just felt if I ever have an opportunity to really make a go of this, I want to do it because it's part of my DNA.
Right, right. Let's play something for the listeners, and we'll get back. We'll talk a little bit about when and what brought you to New York versus some of the other music capitals. You wanted to play the Cannonball Blues. That is actually like a variation of Have Mercy on Me, a song that I first learned through the Buckinghams in Chicago, which, of course, is a great R&B song. Tell me a little story about... No, it's not called Have Mercy on Me.
No, it's actually, Tom, it's called Mercy, Mercy, Mercy.
Okay.
And it was written and recorded by Joe Zawinul and Cannonball Adderley, the Cannonball Adderley Quintet.
Okay, now Joe went on to do the Jazz Crusaders, correct?
Right.
Okay,
right,
okay.
Right. Joe Zawinul on keyboards, piano, and Cannonball Adderley, who lived in Gary, and he actually passed away in Gary, Cannonball did for a while. But at any rate, Nat Adderley, Cannonball, Joe Zawinul, and a couple of others in that group. But it was called Mercy, Mercy, Mercy. It was a huge hit. And it was recorded, as you said, by the Buckinghams. And they had a huge hit off of it, too. And Queen Latifah had a huge hit off of it a few years back. And it's one of those jazz standards. It's a blues jazz standard, soul jazz, some people call it, as you know.
Did you know Cannonball?
No, I did not. I did not know Cannonball. He was quite ahead of my time in the sense that I was a young adolescent at the time when he was really, really hot. But I had heard him play because he used to play at Reverend Jesse Jackson's Operation Breadbasket every Saturday. They had a meeting there on 47th and South Park in Chicago at the Regal Theater, and he was in the band, so I would sometimes go there and I would hear him. But I took the song and I added new vocalies or lyrics to it, changed the lyrics, and so what you'll be hearing is my lyric to the Mercy, Mercy, Mercy by Joe Zawinul.
Well, let's do it. This is the second track on Dennis's album, Bossa, Blues, and Ballads. We'll be back to talk with him some more after this. Check it out.
This song came out way back in the day. Cannonball and Zawinul had come to play. The three grooved in that said, what more can blues say? When love fails because you made it slip away. When your lover's leaving, says you've been deceiving, caught you by surprise, you apologize. And so you plead, baby, 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 please have mercy on me. I'm just human, can't you see? Although I hurt you, I never meant to. What can I do? This can't be true. Cannonball looked at Zawinul and said, a broke heart is what every lover dreads. As long as blues is life and life is for the living, souls can make a go if one's forgiven. Remember, pride comes before a fall. Show a little mercy, don't hesitate or stall and cop your plea. Baby, baby, please. I need you right here beside me. A little mercy, mercy, please. Fingers danced across the keys. The three grooved as one in perfect harmony. One thing it seemed that they could all agree. Mercy is the thing that we all need. A fool's heart seldom has humility. Life without love is blues and misery. Love's what you need. Mercy is the recipe. If there's happiness you seek, remember these words. I love you. Mercy, 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 please.
Have mercy. That is my guest, Dennis Llewellyn Day, off his Bossa Blues and Ballads album that came out this year. When did this exactly come out, Dennis?
It was released August the 25th of this year.
Okay. How's it been doing so far?
It's been doing great. I'm so pleasingly surprised at how well it's doing. It's been very well received in a number of major markets. I was just out in San Diego recently. And on the radio station there, the jazz station there, and they played several of the tracks, and it was doing drive time, and that was very exciting. And I actually debuted it in Nashville, which is where I attended school. So the station, the jazz station there, has it in heavy rotation, and that's the Music City, and that's where I did so much of my early singing and gigging and you know, Nashville is a music city. People don't tend to think of the black music that generated out of that. But I'm glad that the Country Music Hall of Fame has created an annex for black music to the Country Music Hall of Fame that's really going to come into its own in 2019.
Hmm.
It's open now, but I think they're going to have like a really kind of coming out of it, kind of a big fanfare about it. But black music was such an integral part of Nashville and always has been. And, you know, when I was in college, I was a part of that scene after I left East Chicago. I started out singing with groups in East Chicago with various groups, and we were connected with Steeltown Records when they first started out. And my group recorded one of the subsidiary labels on Steeltown, Destination,
okay.
A tune that I had written.
Now, that would be the group, the Valiants, your teenage group.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Valiants, yeah. And that's one of the ones that I was mentioning Dusty Rhodes and Jim Coogan and myself and Richard Sanders, rest in peace, Thomas Brannon, David Fields, Jerry Talbert at one time, and those guys. And then later, Delroy Bridgman, who was my friend. Hello, Jug, if you watch, if you're listening to this, we're still here. he's Delroy Bridgman, a great singer in his own right. He was a part of that group. And East Chicago's former fireman was a part of my group as well, Solomon Ard, Chief Solomon Ard, who was my next-door neighbor growing up. Solly was a part of that group, and they recorded, and they were there to help the Jackson Fives along in their early days. And Delroy's been interviewed a number of times about how they would, you know, get sandwiches for the group and refreshments when they were in rehearsal, when they were recording for Steeltown Records. So when I got to Nashville, that sort of continued. I began singing in the choir and touring with the Fisk Choir, where it was an extension of my musical training, actually, because in addition to the musical choirs that were excellent in East Chicago, Roosevelt, the choir at Fisk University was excellent. I don't know if your listeners would know, or you would be really familiar with Fisk University and the Jubilee Singers, but the Jubilee Singers are held as the singers who first introduced black or African-American music to the world in the form of the Negro spiritual back in 1871.
Okay.
And so that legacy has always been paid homage throughout the music culture. I mean, it's one of the benchmarks in music in terms of understanding how the music evolved to blues and gospel and jazz. They were at the rudiment of that.
Now, is that legacy continuing? Are they still? Is there still a group?
Yes, yes, sir. They're still a group. They've been contiguously a group since 1867. 1871, they did their first world tour and performed before Queen Victoria in London. And that's how Nashville actually became the music city. She said to them, the quote is that, "You must come from a very musical place, a musical city." And they told the Queen that they were from Nashville, and hence came the coining of the music city.
That is a great piece of trivia there. I had never heard that, and I was familiar with the Fisk Jubilee Singers. My first radio job was doing black gospel radio, and I had no knowledge of the music. I must admit, I was a kid out of Highland and had no experience in black gospel. But it was the first radio gig I could get, and I had a minister, Pastor Harold Patton, who wound up influencing me so much, turned me on to Thomas A. Dorsey and Mighty Clouds of Joy and the Staples and, you know, Reverend James Cleveland and all these amazing artists that kind of led me, I should say, to the roots of where rock and roll was and how all these musics melded together and how it all started with the spirituals in many ways.
Right. And you know, and we see the vestiges of that, the vestiges of the music in the bluegrass and other forms of music. There's so much of a correlation between the music that they're inseparable in many ways. But the Fisk Jubilee Singers, they weren't so much gospel as the sacred music. They regarded their songs as really sacred. And there was even some hesitancy about singing them in public because they were regarded as such sacred territory. But some of the administrators saw the breadth of their talent and their gifts, and the school was in dire straits for funding right after the Civil War. So they got the idea of putting together this group of a band of singers, and they went out on tour to the United States and then to Europe and raised enough money to save their university. And that legacy has just continued. But at any rate, it's that legacy that I was intrigued with when I decided to leave IU and go down to Fisk to attend Fisk University. And it ended up that I would find myself in some of the clubs down there on Jefferson Street. Which my parents didn't have an inkling that that's what I was doing to make extra money. to make extra money. But, you know, what a guy's got to do, what a guy's got to do,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, why not stay in Nashville? What brought you to New York, and why not L.A.? Or even Philadelphia? The Philly sound there with Gamble and Huff was exploding about the time you were really starting to get your feet on the ground.
Yeah, well, there's a little thing called matrimony, marriage.
Uh-huh. And, life gets in the way of our dreams sometimes.
Called, so love came before that.
Okay.
And then matrimony came with that. And then two kids came with that. And so, you know, and then we came back to Chicago. Settled in Hyde Park, which is where I attended graduate school there at the University of Chicago, and I thought that I would just pursue that trajectory in terms of, okay, got a pretty solid degree behind me now, maybe I should proceed and not think about this music thing. But you know, Tom, it just kept ecking at me and gnawing at me that, you know, it's the gift, it's the talent that you've been given, you know. You can't run from. Why should you just hold it in abeyance? You need to, like, deal with it. So after, you know, various experiences, and I realized, and I think, the epiphany was 9/11. I was in a cushiony job working for the state of New York and as an executive, and everything was going pretty good. But I thought, wow, when 9/11 occurred, I happened to be downtown when the planes hit, and I saw the carnage and had to run with everyone else. And while you're in that situation, you really sort of think through your life, what mm-hmm. are you doing, what are you going to do with it, and who's in charge. And a little voice, which I call God, said to me, you know, you should have been doing your music. You should have been doing your music. You know, you had a chance. Why aren't you? And so that was the time that I realized, like, okay, I'm doing clubs and I'm doing all of the things that I enjoy doing at a very high level with some of the greatest artists. I've just been blessed with having some of the finest artists on the CDs that I recorded, even in Chicago. I mean, I started out, my first CD was R&B. I made the transition from R&B to jazz, which was a good one for me, because I think it has more longevity,
mm-hmm.
You know. And but I started out there with this album that I had done called Dennis Day for Only You, and that was what the late, great Art Porter Jr. Was instrumental on that, as well as Lawrence Hanks, who was director of the Regal Theater, the music director for the music at the Regal Theater. He was the musical director for the album. And the late Terry Morissette was the producer, and he was the drummer on it. He passed away a couple of years ago. Terry was the drummer for Ramsey Lewis and for Pharoah Sanders and for a number of very key acts. So these were top-level people. And then, you know, in Nashville, I was able to work with Billy Cox, who went on to become the bass player for Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
And, you know, and I worked in the same clubs Jimi Hendrix and his band worked in, and the El Morocco and the Club Baron. That's actually where Ted Jarrett, who actually recorded a lot of black artists, and he was given a lifetime award for the Country Music Hall of Fame for his contribution to black music in Nashville. Ted Jarrett produced the first 45 single that I had that went national as a group. The group was called the Jades, and it first was called Dino and the Dynamics. And when we were in the studio,
very Italian.
Yeah, I know. when we were in the studio, the guys decided to change the name from Dino and the Dynamics to the Jades. We'd been Dino and the Dynamics for like 2 years, and the night that we recorded, we changed the name to the Jades. But the record went national. It was playing all over the country, and kids were coming back to school and saying, "Oh, we heard your record," and
mm-hmm.
You know, that type of thing. But Ted Jarrett was the guy behind that, and he was just recognized by the Country Music Hall of Fame not too long ago for his lifetime achievement in this area. So the thread of my involvement with the music has continued, you know, through those cities, Nashville, to here in New York City, And just until 9/11, I just really made more of a assertive commitment to it to ensure that I try doing the best that I can with representing the music to the best of my ability.
What was it that brought you to New York itself the first time as opposed to other cities? I mean, you mentioned that there was marriage and children involved. Did you move there for family reasons? Did you move there for the work opportunity?
I moved there, again, at this stage in my life, at that particular stage in my life, it was love.
Okay.
I came here with a fiancé, and I stayed here without a fiancé.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so when I came here, rather than return to Washington, D.C., I decided that this was a place where the music was really everywhere, and that the venues offered such an opportunity. And I thought, well, I've got the training, the degrees, and the interest to proceed in music, that I will stay and I will just make this work here. And that's what I did. And that was like, 35 years ago.
Oh, wow. Our guest today here on Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio is Dennis Llewellyn Day. He is from East Chicago, living in New York. He's traveled all over, released a lot of music, rubbed elbows with some of the big names, and some of the names that you might not recognize that are behind-the-scene players. We're going to play another song right now. We'll be back with Dennis, but this one is called Wasting Time, or Wasting My Time, and it's actually written by Billy Vera. And I had Billy Vera on the show not too awfully long ago when the Little Richard box set came out, and he wrote the liner notes for it. How did you tie in with Billy? And then we're going to play that song.
Yeah, Billy and I have been on Facebook as Facebook friends for, 5 or 6 years. And when he came to New York about 3 or 4 years ago, about 4 years ago, I went to one of his gigs, and we finally met. And we hit it off, and, got quite a bit in common and what have you, and we stayed in touch, and we would chat online and that sort of thing. And I got in touch with him about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and I said, Billy, I'm looking for material. Do you have a song that you think, really suits my voice and something that you think I can deliver on? And he said, let me think about it. And sure enough, he got back in touch with me, and he said, I think that this might work for you. And he said, but let me say this to you. He said, keep it kind of old-fashioned. He said, keep it kind of like in that traditional realm. He said, I think it would work better that way. I said, okay, I'll see what I can do.
All right. Well, this is it. Wasting My Time, a Billy Vera song interpreted by Dennis Llewellyn Day. We'll be back with Dennis a final time after this.
Clock says noon, I'm still in my bed. The dream of you is still in my head. Last night I drank too much wine. I'm just wasting my time. Gulped down some coffee, jumped in the shower. I let it run for nearly an hour, pretending the water is your warm hands touching me. I'm just wasting my time. One of these days I'll get myself together. All I need is a little inspiration. But you can speed up the process, baby, by bringing your fine self back to me. So if you decide to come to your senses, jump on a plane, I'll cover your expenses. This killing time is killing me. I'm just wasting my time. Mm-hmm. these days I'll get myself together. All I need is a little inspiration. You can speed up the process, baby, by bringing your fine self back to me. So if you decide to come to your senses, jump on a plane and I'll cover your expenses. This killing time is killing me. I'm just wasting my time. I'm just wasting my time.
Wasting my time. We're not wasting yours. We've got some great talent with us today. Dennis Llewellyn Day from East Chicago, Indiana, now living in New York by way of places like Washington, D.C. and Nashville. The man has traveled all over, performed with some great entertainers. We are playing music off his brand new album released in August, Dennis Llewellyn Day, Bossa Blues and Ballads. And it is... put out on your own label, and you are, as I mentioned, kind of a renaissance man. You're marketing yourself. You've got the D-Day Media Group. You are marketing. You are producing. You are doing everything in-house. You're a turnkey operation, so to speak. How hard is that, Dennis? It sounds like it's mind-boggling to wear every hat in the business.
Yeah, well, it's been a juggling act for sure, but, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, as they say, but... luckily, I do have some support, a wonderful wife, to the extent that she can, because she's busy in her own right.
Mm-hmm. But is she a performer?
No, she's not, but she does play guitar, and we have fun jamming, you know, playing our little tunes, R&B tunes and hymns mm-hmm. and things. You know, we just have fun with it, just make little videos for the kids and that sort of thing. But no, but I have some people that I... hire out and do subcontracting with, because the method to my madness, really, Tom, is I'm trying to build something that will empower some of my friends and some of the people that I know to be talented, and there's a lot of gifted people out here. I'm really trying to build something that would allow them to have a springboard into this marketplace, because, you know, as you may detect, it's been trial and error, and it's been persistence that's gotten me to this point, and learning to pick the kinds of fights that you think that you have a chance and struggle that you can really wage a good fight against and fight the good fight, mm-hmm. as opposed to like spinning your wheels on things, you know. So you know, when I looked at new material, well, I said, you know, well, Billy Vera's been a friend, and he's been, we've been really cordial towards each other. Maybe he can help me in that area, and reached out to him. And so it's things that I'm learning in this way that I put together D-Day Media Group, and during the period that I knew I was going to make a transition into music, I felt like I needed the vehicle to make the music work. And so I studied media, and so I got a second master's degree in media arts through Long Island University. And so that degree has really helped me to understand the configuration between media and music and the things. And I know a little bit about your background, and I know you're a consummate professional, and you understand, you know, these dynamics. And some of my friends may not quite get it. Mm-hmm. How do you get from point A to point Z, you know, and it's incremental and it's trial and error, but you have to really keep your ear to the sounding board and try to listen to what the changes are and how you go about seizing the opportunities. And so I'm trying to build something that eventually at some point when, you know, I feel that the window is open wide enough that I can bring others into the fold, so to speak, into D-Day Media Records recording. So that's really what I had in mind for the longest, is to try to leave that that kind of opening, that kind of window, so I can bring some others along. So it's been finding good people to work with me. The musicians that I work with, and I've been blessed, as you pointed out, to work with some of the best musicians in the world. On this CD, for example, and that recording, Harold Mayburn has the number one jazz album in the country right now, the number one jazz instrumental album on Jazz Weekly's charts for the last 2 weeks. Is Harold Mayburn's Iron Man, The Smoke Sessions. You can check it out. You know, he's out of Memphis, and he actually started out in Chicago with the MJ. Do you remember the MJT Plus 3?
That I do not.
The MJT Plus 3 was with Walter Perkins Jr. and Harold Mayburn, and I've forgotten the other fellows who were part of that group, but it was like a soul jazz group, very hot back in the 60s. At any rate, he left Chicago, came to New York, and he's worked with everybody. Betty Carter, Miles Davis, Sonny Rawls, toured with all these people, you know, Freddie Hubbard, you know. So, but he's in his 80s, and we're hoping that he will become a national jazz master, you know, that he'll receive that honor, which is the plaudit that you're given when you just reach the pinnacle of your career, and he's right. getting up in years. But Harold's on that, and Billy Kay, who was a drummer for Stanley Turrentine's great album Sugar, which is one of the 100 best recordings in jazz, according to Billboard magazine. But Billy's on that album, and he was the drummer for Gloria Lynn, and he was the drummer for George Benson for his major tours, and he was the first drummer for George Wein's Newport Jazz Festival. He was the first drummer on that jazz festival, and he's in his 80s, and the Washington Post did a feature article about him back in August that you can still look up, Billy Kay, and it's about his career. I've worked with him for years in quartets and groups and quintets in my groups and in his quartets as well, and so I wanted to pay homage to these guys because, you know, they're with us, and they're still out here working, and I wanted to bring the younger guys into the fold and gals as well. The other artists, Camille Thurman, who's on this CD, who does a track with me as a duet. We do the Bossa Nova tune by Jobim, the Waters of March, and just does a beautiful job on that tune. And she, in her own right, is one of the up-and-coming stars of jazz and just a beautiful young lady. She's on tour right now with Jazz at Lincoln Center's Christmas show with Wynton Marsalis as director, of course. So she plays the saxophone and she sings.
Well, you've
on
got,
my album, she's singing.
You've got 19 musicians on this album. How long did it take you to make this record from start to finish? And was everybody playing in the same studio, or was some of this, with today's technology, I hate to say mailed in, but were they recorded in different studios and then you mixed it later? How did you make this record?
Right. No. There were no mail-ins. All of the records, the recordings were done in studio.
Excellent.
What happened was we started out with the album with one aggregation of musicians, and as things, this was like four years ago, one of the musicians had to have surgery, so I had to get another pianist. We went back and forth between studios over the succession of a couple of years to record the tracks and to select the music that we're going to use and that sort of thing. But one of the biggest obstacles that we had was on the publishing rights to try to, when I began to do vocal leads and write my own lyrics to songs, I didn't realize, you know, what an obstacle that could be in terms of when it came down to negotiating the type of you know, the type of royalty and the type of residuals that you really want to try to accrue when you do something like that. And so I held out for the longest. I held out for a year and a half on doing anything because I just didn't feel I was being treated fairly, and I just didn't want to go down that road. And so it's one of those unfortunate things where you just reach a stalemate, and rather than budge on it, I just said no, and unless I can have some kind of a happy medium, I'm just not going for it. So what happens is people move along and they go into different directions with their own projects and with their own groups, and so you find out who's available to help you complement what you started out. So,
okay.
You know, it doesn't take 4 years to go by too long when you have those kind of you know, hurdles that you have to try to stride when you're trying to put together something that you want to be a quality statement that has some legacy value to it. So that's really the explanation that I have for it.
Now that the album is out, now that you're getting airplay across the country in different cities, what is the game plan? Are you touring behind this? Are you doing like a big band project? Are you doing like a stripped down version of you and a quartet? How are you marketing this live?
Yeah, I'm going to be going out to Portland in about a week and a half, and we're organizing some things there. I did the Portland Jazz Festival a few years ago, so we're working on putting something together for February for that in Portland when I'm out there. And then returning, I'm going down in January as well to New Orleans, where I have four stations in New Orleans are carrying it in moderate rotation, are carrying my music there, and trying to set up something as we speak there in New Orleans. And in returning, I'll be at the Russian Samovar at some point early part of the year. That's a jazz club that's on 52nd Street, which is where the Jazz Corridor historically was in Manhattan. But it was bought and owned by it became Jilly's.
Famous.
You heard of Jilly's?
Oh
right?
yeah.
So it was Jilly's, and the Russian Samovar, the name was changed after Baryshnikov, the Russian expatriate dancer. He and Baryshnikov, who was the Nobel Peace Prize winner, they bought it and changed the name to it. To the Russian Samovar, so that name has been with it since then. But they have a jazz program there every Sunday, and I plan to be doing that. And Local 802, the Jazz Foundation, has a regular date on Mondays, and this Monday is their Christmas party. I plan to be a part of that. Okay. But what we're doing now is putting together the tour framework for the markets that the songs, the tracks are going very well in, and that they're getting airplay. And that's going to include Florida and New Orleans, where we'll take charts down there and have a band tutored and put together to do the work there. And hopefully I'll get it to go back to Paris in the spring and France and do some work there. So we're all working on understanding that right now you gotta strike while the iron's hot.
Hot
right now.
Well, might I suggest you try and get a hold of Jeffrey Brown, the professor over at VU, Valparaiso University. They do a huge jazz festival every spring. I'm not sure if that would coincide with your Paris trip, but you would be more than welcome, I'm sure, with your hometown roots there, and it's a hugely popular thing. Basie's Orchestra, I mean, everybody's played there. With that said, we are just about out of time. Do you want to play Superstition, or do you want to play Waters of March, which of course features the young lady you were just talking about? Your choice.
Let's defer to Waters of March with my lovely friend, Ms. Camille Thurman, and I doing the Joe Beam tune.
All right. Dennis, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate it very much.
Love to see you back home. We got to get you over here somewhere.
I want to get to your record store and get some of my records there, and maybe we could do a little set there.
That'd be great. I'd love to do that.
Well, let's talk about that, okay?
All right. Listeners, you can keep up with Dennis at ddaymedia.com. ddaymedia.com. You can email him at ddaymediagroup@gmail.com. Without any further ado, let's close out as we started by letting the music do the talking. Waters of March.
A stick, a stone, it's the end of the road. It's the rest of a stump, it's a little long. It's a sliver of glass, it is life, it's the sun. It is night, it is death, it's a trap, it's a gun. The oak when it blooms, the fox in the brush, a knot in the wood, the song of a thrush. The wood of the wind, a clip, a fall, a scratch, a lump. It is nothing at all, it's the wind blowing free. It's the end of a slope, it's a beam, it's a void, it's a hunch, it's a hope. And the riverbank talks of the waters of March. It's the end of the strain, it's the joy in your heart.
The foot, the ground, the flesh and the bone. Shot stone. a flash, a silvery glow, a fight, a bet, the range of a bow, the bed of the well, the end of the line, the dismay in the face, it's a lot to define. A spear, a spike, a point, a nail, a drip, a drop, the end of the tale.
A truckload of bricks in the soft morning light, the shot of a gun in the dead of the night, a mile of must, a thrust, a bump, it's a girl, it's a rhyme, it's a cold, it's the mumps.
The plan of the house, the body in bed,
and the car that got stuck, it's the mud, a float, a drift,
a flight, a wing,
a hawk, a quail, the promise of spring, and the riverbank top of the waters of March, it's the promise of life, it's the joy in your heart.